I'm all ears. You want to just start off by reading your message, or do you want to just tell me how I can best help? How would you like to take it?
Before that, if I could ask you a question about, this being a public call, I did email you a few months ago asking if it would be possible to have a free call, but then for me to have a possibility to pay for the recording to be taken off later on after it had been on, say, a few weeks or so.
Oh, that's not usually how I
how does it sound?
Yeah, that's not usually how I do things, because then I have a hole in my show list, right? So then there's a show that's like, say, 6422, and then what happens is there's like a hole in my show list. So tell me, why is it that you want it to become private?
Just because the very like shameful nature of my call and adjacent to that, I just feel that someone will recognize me from this call. So
that's all. Now I can change the pitch of your voice and so on if you like.
Well, sure. If that's the way to go, let's go that way.
Okay. All right. So
I will.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, I will. Perhaps leave some more things like murky.
Okay.
For that reason, then, but
yeah. Yes. Or okay, if you want, so you can just pray for a private call, and then you don't have to worry about any of that.
Well, yeah, sure, that's true. Okay. Well, anyway, let's get started. So
okay. So sorry, just to be clear, it's a public call, right? So
yes.
Okay, got it. All
public
right.
Call.
Go ahead.
Yes. So my text with calling registration was very brief. It said only that I have two issues that are or have prevented me from, let's say, living a real life. And so the two issues are, I have a stutter, and then the other issue is that I have a serious gambling addiction. And those two, then coupled with some other minor issues, have like I think they have combined to this very large knot of shame that I feel, and that all has like prevented me from having a normal life. Like you hear from people who drank all their like family and house and inheritance and so forth all that way, and the same could be said about gambler. Well, in my case, due to gambling and stuttering and shyness and all of that, I haven't been able to gain any of that. So I'm now in my early 40s, and I'm kind of in a situation where I would have been like if I was 20. So one huge issue is that I've been living with my dad for the last like 15 years or so, and of course it hinders from like bringing people to your home and having a social life and so forth. And even the fact that I live with my dad, I have only disclosed it like to a couple of people outside my family. And well, would that be a good starting point? Are you to ask questions or?
Sure. I appreciate that. And sorry, just remind me, how often or how long have you listened to what I do?
Since I did before COVID. So that.
Wow. Okay. So like 6 years, 7 years.
7 years. So.
Okay.
Yes. I'm not glad. Yes.
Well, I'm sure that you know, then the first question I generally ask is, tell me about your childhood.
Yeah, sure. So my mom and dad are from different cultures and countries. My mom studied a language and went to a country of said language. And there she met my father in a church, and they fell in love there. And then they eventually moved to my country. And my country is of a decent level of welfare society or state. So, I'm the second of four children. I am the only son of the family, and I had a reasonably, let's say, normal or happy childhood. But my mom has said later on that I was, by temperament, I was very like shy and wary. So I would very easily start to cry if I was like scolded or even just said no to, and so I was a toddler when I was startled by a dog, and I was up to that point I was fluently speaking in two languages, but after that I started to stutter, and I have stuttered ever since. And the stuttering is something that fluctuates very well, not very much, but quite a lot, and it's quite common in people who stutter. So my case is not the most like severe, but it's bad enough that it's in your mind all the time, and every day, every moment, you always have to choose your words, think about what you say, and when to say it, and so forth, and ponder on if you will be able to use certain terms and words, or if you have to choose another word, or if you want to, or just must use the specific term, and then you likely will have to make let's say ugly faces because of the struggle of getting the words out. That's the way it manifests. Manifests itself.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about that. It's a very big challenge, and it's very hard to stay natural and relaxed and chat when you're concerned about that. So I have big sympathies for that. And what happened with the dog? That's wild.
Well, I was just I remember it a bit differently than my mom tells me, but it was a summer day, and I was walking with mom near our apartment flat, and then I kind of took off from mom, and then at our in front of our house a neighbor with a big dog just came, and the dog was in a leash. But it was big enough to like scare me, and so it happened and started.
I don't see that. And just because I don't see it doesn't mean that it's wrong or anything like that. I just can't comprehend that. I mean, if you had been a dog had pounced on you and growled at you, over drooled on your face, bit you, or something like that, then that would make sense. But I mean, the dog was on a leash. It was a big dog. It startled you. How does that produce 40 years of stuttering?
Well,
I'm not blaming you, obviously. I'm not blaming you. I just, yeah. It's almost impossible for me to understand. And this could, of course, be a limitation of mine, obviously. But I don't see how this could produce 40 years of stuttering. So just help me understand it a bit more.
Well, One theory is that the propensity to stutter is dormant in people, and some things just may trigger it, and I guess that's how it happened with me. And me having been a kind of not the bravest toddler back then, crying if I was.
Well, hang on, no. So, hang on, sorry. You can't give yourself a moral judgment as a toddler. Like, toddlers can't be brave or cowardly, because they're just toddlers. So you're just born with the nature you're born with, and that nature, of course, varies considerably, and it's mostly genetic, and parents really can't do a huge amount to change it, other than, break it with severe trauma or whatever it is. So you can't say brave or cowardly when it comes to you as a toddler, right? Because toddlers can't be brave or cowardly because they don't have the morals or the will to change their behavior. I mean, how old were you when the dog scared you?
Between 1.5 and 2.
Oh, so you don't remember this in particular? Or do you remember it?
Not really. Not well.
Well, so you do remember it. I mean, nobody remembers anything well at that age, but you do remember at 1.5 being startled by a dog. Or do you think it might be a story you've been told that then becomes a memory? Because that certainly happens.
Well, I kind of remember her running from the other side of the house, and it was a bright sunny day. And then I turned towards the front of the house, and there I
encountered the dog. Yeah.
The dog.
Okay, I think it's fair to say that you can't be brave or cowardly at 18 months of age. Is that fair to say? Like, there's no such thing as a brave or cowardly baby. There's just a nature. Some babies are more prone to startling. They have a higher startle response or whatever. But it's not a matter of courage or cowardice, right?
Well, I suppose we're just talking about inherent, temperament, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's all I know.
No, no, but it's not a moral judge. You can't have a moral judgment of a baby. Or a toddler, right? Okay. Does that make sense? Like, you can't.
I'm not quite following how morals go into it.
Well, because you said you weren't brave. So brave is a moral quality, right?
Okay.
Brave is a preferred moral quality. I mean, from Aristotle, we get the sense that courage is in the mean, right? Which means that too little courage and you're a coward. Too much courage and you're foolhardy, which is also bad. So, babies or toddlers don't process whether they should or should not embrace particular dangers or not. I mean, babies and particular toddler boys are well known for embracing very dangerous risks, right? Like, you have to watch them like a hawk because they're always jumping out and climbing bookshelves and jumping off couches and just doing crazy stuff, right? And so you don't have, as at 18 months of age, you don't have any capacity to judge whether something is a worthwhile risk to take, right? So if there's a boy who likes a girl and the boy refuses to ask her out, let's say he's 16 or, some age where it's reasonably appropriate to ask the girl out, right? So if there's a boy who's 16, he really likes a girl, and everyone's encouraging him to ask her out, and he just won't do it, even though he wants to, we could say at that point that that's a bit cowardly, right? Because, we all have to take these risks to go and ask girls out and get rejected and all that kind of stuff, right? But that's 16. Yeah. Now, if a 16-year-old kid or a 16-year-old young man sees a kitten and is frightened of the kitten, we would say that probably is a bit excessive in terms of a fear response because the kitten can't really do you any damage. And so we might encourage that person to touch the kitten and get used to it and so on, right? Now, Because if you say cowardly, or I was not courageous, or I lacked bravery, well, courage and bravery is a moral quality. And if you say I lacked a moral quality called bravery at the age of 18 months, that's calling yourself deficient for something you have very little, you have almost no control over your responses at that age. Really, you have no control over your responses. And I say this like I knew two little girls when I was younger. And I remember vacuuming, and I remember this very vividly. They were a couple of years apart in age. And when I was vacuuming, the first girl, the older girl, when she was a little toddler, and when I vacuumed, she was fascinated. She'd come up and touch the vacuum and play with the lights, and she'd actually want to stand on the vacuum while I vacuumed, and it was kind of fun. Now, the second child, when the vacuum was turned on, she began like half screaming and crying uncontrollably, and she was frightened of the vacuum. Now, I would never in a million years say that the first girl was courageous, who stood on the vacuum and wrote it, and the second girl was a coward or lacked courage or bravery. They are just getting the stimulus response from their system, right? They don't have a choice over how they react. And it wasn't like the first, and we're talking about kids who are like a year, 14 months old, little baby toddlers, right? So the first girl was not terrified of the vacuum, but mastered herself and decided to ride the vacuum. She just, that's her system was like, hey, the vacuum's kind of cool and fun. Now, the second girl who was frightened of the vacuum was not like the first girl, but lacking in courage. They just had entirely different wiring, if that makes sense. Entirely different wiring. So it's not, and now we can talk about courage or cowardice when people start to get older, then we have virtues, right? But there's no such thing as courage or cowardice or bravery or cowardice at 18 months. You just have the system in your body that you have. And some people have a very strong stimulus response and their fight or flight is very active. And some people have a lower fight or flight response, and they don't get bothered by things that other people get bothered by. And neither is good or bad. You know, some people have, you know, the sort of the joke on the internet, they have like no survival skills. They'll go and do just dangerous things. They don't process danger very well. And that can lead to some very foolish decisions, right? Like, you know, the sort of story of the woman who goes to the really sketchy party and gets drunk and, you know, ends up in a really bad situation. It's like, well, you should have more caution. You should have more, quote, fear. Whereas, you know, there's the other person who, you know, won't even go to a friendly social gathering because they feel shy and introverted and so on. And we say, well, you probably want to work on that a little bit and try and get your level of courage up. So people are working with different stimulus response, different nervous systems, different levels of intensity and so on. And, you know, some kids are more sensitive to sound. Some kids are less sensitive to sound. Some people love roller coasters. Some people hate roller coasters. I mean, it's just a wide variety of things. So I'm sorry to give you the long speech, but it's a bit surprising to me. Like, I mean, if you've listened to me for 6 or 7 years, then you know that children are not born with moral demands or requirements because they're babies and toddlers. And so if you say, or if you've defined yourself as lacking courage because you were startled by a dog, then that's a moral criticism, if that makes sense. And that's not appropriate for somebody of that age.
All right. This may just be an issue of the term I chose. I don't know, but maybe we should continue and
that's not how these conversations work. Come on, you know that, right? Okay. All I have are the terms that you use, right? I can't go into your brain, right? So all I have are the terms that you use. Now, if you feel that I'm wrong or you think that I'm wrong, then you should tell me that I'm wrong and you should tell me how I'm wrong. That's fine. I could be wrong. But we can't just ignore what I said, like I never said it, because that's kind of rude, right?
Well, I have heard you say, these kind of things in the past, yeah. But I just don't have the acumen to comment on it if it's right
okay,
or wrong.
Well, let me ask you, you think that an 18-month-old baby can lack courage or be a coward?
Well, probably not.
Okay, can you think of a single 18-month-old baby that you could judge as being a coward? Do you think that that could be possible?
Well, I would just revert to it being a case of different temperaments.
Sure, different temperaments, I agree. Yeah, but that's not a moral judgment.
Yeah, so, okay.
Like you could say, I was born with an easily startled nervous system. I would accept that.
Yes, okay.
Sure, I mean, and I agree with that. But I wouldn't say,
I wouldn't say
I was a coward or I lacked moral courage. That would be like saying, well, my father was very wealthy, so when I was 18 months old, I was a very good entrepreneur and I was very good at managing money because my father was very wealthy. It's like, well, that wouldn't make any sense if you're a baby saying that I'm, you know, well, you know, I had $10 million to my name as a baby because there was money in a trust fund. And that proves that I'm very good at managing money at 18 months of age. Like that wouldn't make much sense. So, and the reason I'm stopping on this point is because if you judge yourself as deficient for your response to the dog, that's a formative moment in your mind where you say, I am deficient. I am cowardly. I am not brave. And that's going to sink right into your sense of self, into your identity, right?
Yeah, that's a fair point for sure, yes.
Okay, good. And the other thing it tells me is that you have been allowed by your family to have this perception of yourself without interruption. And I would assume that your family has reinforced this perception of you in that almost 40 years after you were startled by the dog, you're still saying that you lack courage or you were cowardly. And your parents or your siblings have not said to you, well, that's a ridiculous thing to say because you were just a baby. You can't be brave or cowardly as a baby.
Mm. Sure, it makes sense. Yes.
I mean, if an adult pees in your eyeball, you can get the adult charged with assault. If a baby pees in your eyeball, it's an accident. The baby's not trying to do anything. The baby just has no control over its bladder, right? So that's my sort of point. It tells me a lot about your family as a whole, that your family hasn't corrected this in you consistently and repeatedly. And that's why, like, if you're in your 40s, everything you say about yourself has been accepted by your family. And since a baby can't call himself cowardly, a baby can't say, oh, I was such a coward, right? Because a baby doesn't even conceive of the world in that kind of way. And that means, I assume, that your family has called you lacking bravery or has called you cowardly, perhaps for this, perhaps for other things, if that makes sense. But what we say to babies and toddlers becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So if there's a father who says to his son, you are unlikable. You are unlikable. Nobody's going to like you. Nobody's going to care about you. You're going to be lonely your whole life. Well, what happens is that kid probably will not bother to try and make friends, will not bother to try and learn social skills and so on. And then it becomes true. And then the kid is often, you know, will grow up to be unlikable because he doesn't have any social skills, because he's been told he was unlikable from the very beginning. And if you say to your child, well, you were a coward with that dog, or you lacked courage with that dog. You lack courage. Well, how do we develop courage? We develop courage by putting ourselves into reasonably dangerous situations and succeeding. So we gain courage in riding a bike by getting on a bike and falling from time to time, learning how to ride the bike well. And that's how we gain physical courage, right? It's the same way we gain physical skills. How do we become good at playing baseball? Well, we play baseball. So if your family has called you morally deficient because of the dog or other things, then you'll say, well, geez, I guess I'm a coward, so I better not do very many risky things. And then you don't overcome fears, and it kind of becomes true, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So,
has
your family...
It makes sense.
Yeah, has your family pushed back against you saying that you lack courage or you're cowardly?
Well, me lacking courage doesn't, like, come into conversation very much, so...
Okay, so this is one of the first words you used to describe yourself at 18 months. So, are they aware that this is how you, is your family aware that this is how you describe yourself?
Well, I haven't talked about it with anyone else than my mom. And she just said what I said earlier. So,
remind me what she said.
So, that's all. She said how I was a baby and a toddler who cried easily,
mm-hmm,
when told no, and then, well, I suppose that's all, yeah, and then the dog thing. So, but we haven't talked about the dog thing really. I just asked about it a few years ago, and she kind of, there was some nuance that she remembers differently, but I don't remember it being like very important. So
okay, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
Yes. So I trust it was pretty much how I remember it. I mean, meeting the dog, that is, yeah.
Okay, all right. And what do you think stuttering communicates to people who don't know that you have the issue in the first place?
Well, one thing is that some people can mistake it for... symptom of drug use. I have had that because of that, like how my jaw moves when I struggle to utter the words and so forth. And then I suppose some people think it's linked to intelligence, and it is low intelligence and being slow and having trouble communicating and so forth. So none of those are, of course, like desirable qualities to have.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, stuttering indicates nervousness.
Yeah. Yes, that too. Yeah.
And do you feel that you experience, or do you suffer from, I mean, we all have nervousness from time to time or whatever, right? But do you feel that you are, maybe a little bit more than average on the nervous side?
Well, due to stuttering, yeah, maybe a bit more nervous than the average, but I have a good sense of myself. Nevertheless, I think I'm like, decently capable and good guy and isn't in communications and treat people like colleagues well and so forth. So I don't know. It's
okay. And sorry to jump topics for a sec. So you said your parents came from two different countries. Are they different races?
No, I would say.
Okay, got it. And are your parents? Go ahead.
Yes, they share the same religion. And I suppose most of the values and so forth.
And what are your parents' races? Well, I guess just to say, what is your race?
Caucasian.
White. Okay, got it. All right. So when you began to develop a stutter after you were startled by the dog, do you know what your parents did about that?
Right away, I don't know, but They put me in speech therapy when I was probably like maybe 5 years old or 4 years old. And then roughly at the same time, I attended a camp that was for kids who stutter. Yeah, so.
Okay, so a couple of years after you. Okay, so a couple of years after you were startled by the dog and developed a stutter, your parents tried to get you some help for your stuttering, right?
Yes.
Okay, and how affectionate would you say your parents are?
Dad, like, well, when I was a kid, he was like at a scale between 0 and 10. He was probably like maybe 3.
And I'm sorry to interrupt. So do you mind if we use a scale from minus 10 to plus 10? In other words, minus 10 is very hostile, plus 10 is very affectionate, because the 0 to 10 scale is only scales of affection, but sometimes parents can be quite critical or hostile as well. So what would your father swing from sort of minus 10 to plus 10, from very hostile to very affectionate?
Well, of course, in this, what comes to play is the sporadic physical abuse that I and my sister got when we were kids. So that will take it to the minuses. But then there were like some good times. But I suppose on the whole, it just might take it to like minus, let's say minus 3 then.
Okay, so minus 3, you said there was sporadic physical abuse. What do you mean by that?
Well, I remember him using the belt on the buttocks a few times. On like total in my childhood, I'd estimate he like reprimanded me physically, like, let's say, like, maybe 20 times total, something like that.
Reprimanded you physically? So the language is a little confusing, because you said physical abuse, and now you're saying reprimanded you physically, which is not quite the same thing, is it?
Yeah, I suppose not.
So why do you change the language?
Of course, he always had a reason.
Well, everyone has a reason. I mean, everyone has a reason for everything they do. But I'm just curious about the language change from physical abuse to reprimanding.
Well, I can't really remember what I have supposedly done back then to deserve those belt whacks, but. Probably something that what kids normally do. I don't remember doing anything like, especially like bad or forbidden. But it was a strict household, so yeah.
Okay, so now we have three terms: abuse, reprimand, and strict.
Yes. I suppose the strictness stems from the religious background, and it's a sect of Christianity that has its own like prophet, and it's a large denomination in the world, and one of its core things at least used to be a certain kind of diet. So if we talk a little about my dad, there are two things that really interest him in the world. Like, I would say it's the really the religion and everything, like that has to do with it, and then the diet. And the diet is basically vegetarian and having like strict rules in terms of when to eat next, after you have eaten a meal, and so forth. And so I suppose some of those, let's say, abuses or reprimands were linked to maybe not following the diet correctly or something like that.
Okay, got it. All right.
Yes.
Okay, so do you remember from what age did you get these 20 beatings?
Well, I don't remember the first ones, but I'd say they ended like, they might have even ended before I started school. So I was quite young back then, yes.
I'm sorry, before you started school, you mean before you started kindergarten?
Well, I'm not sure about kindergarten, but...
I don't know what you mean by school. That's all you got to tell me. Do you mean primary school?
Yes, primary school. I was, I'm at the age of 7, yes.
Okay, got it. So, you were beaten 20 times with a belt before the age of 7.
Not always with a belt, but like by hand or something like that. But there was one special occasion, so to say, as a special kind of, well, form of abuse or whatever you want to call it. So me and my sister were told to, there was this space under the staircase at our home. And then I don't remember if the keys were already there on the floor or he put it there, but so there
I'm
were,
sorry, the like, what was already on the floor?
Raw keys.
Raw peas, okay.
Peas in a pot.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and we were told to kneel on them towards the wall for some time, like maybe like 20 minutes or so, in a high kneeling position. Yeah, and I assume that sounds kind of crazy to you. And
sorry, do you mean like a stress position, like a torture position?
Well, on our knees, but like the rest of the body was like standing up.
Okay, so the tough on the knees, right?
Yes.
Okay. And he had you kneel before the frozen. Oh, sorry. He had you kneel before the peas in the pod for 20 minutes.
Yes.
Okay. And why did he do that? If you remember.
No, I don't remember the reason. No.
Okay. And was your mother aggressive in this way as well?
Not in this way. I can't exactly recall. She might have like smacked a couple times with the belt, but then mainly it was like more gentle, like taps on the forehead or something like that. But it wasn't like foreign to her to abuse or reprimand us. But as I said, it in a more like a restrained manner and like force and that. So, yes.
And what about verbal discipline?
Verbal discipline. To be honest, I kind of don't recall.
No, I'm sorry to interrupt. That can't be the case. If your parents are very religious, there's going to be a lot of verbal discipline. There has to be, because that's how religion gets communicated. Right? They had say, this is what religion is. This is what God is. This is what your duties are. This is what your rules are. If you follow them, you go to heaven. If you don't follow them, you go to hell, or whatever they were saying. But religion gets passed down to children in the form of verbal discipline, verbal correction, and often verbal threats in terms of hell or heaven or salvation of soul or being with loved ones after death or something like that. So again, unless I'm completely missing something about this religion, I can't imagine how there was little to no verbal discipline.
Well, I don't remember it being like linked to religious like vocabulary or themes that much. So I can't really, I can't remember. It was just, I would say the verbal stuff was maybe like more mainstream, if it makes sense, like non-religious. But of course I might be wrong, but I just don't quite remember this aspect.
Well, I mean, your parents had to have told you about the religion, right?
Well, yeah, we went to the so-called Sunday school. And
okay, so course, what so were you we taught? Were, sorry to interrupt. What were you taught about in the Sunday school?
Well, the Bible was read, and the like the kids' versions and stories of the Bible. So we were told about the Jesus' teachings and morals and so forth. If you want more specific, I can't really tell. I don't know.
Well, when did you learn? Did you learn about divine punishment as a kid?
I suppose so. I mean, being sent to either heaven or hell, or what?
Well, approval or disapproval of God or Jesus, punishments and rewards like heaven and hell, and so on.
Well, yeah, yeah. But it's, but I don't remember being like what's the like, I don't remember being scared of going to hell that much, you know. I think they just chose another kinds of like words and whatever. So
you were told about hell and going to hell, but it was not a negative thought for you or frightening.
Well, I just said that they didn't scare with the hell possibility that much. Perhaps there was some, like it hasn't like etched into my mind from all those years ago.
Oh, so maybe they told you about hell, but they reassured you that you weren't going.
I don't know about this.
I mean, just, it's a little confusing, and I'm sorry for being confused, but it's a little confusing that you develop a lifelong stutter for being startled by a dog on a leash, but you're not frightened of hell at all, though you believe in it. I'm sorry, again, just, this is a little, it's just tough for me to put together, so if you can just help me understand.
Yes. Is there a question or...
Yeah, help me understand. I mean, help me understand why you're more frightened of a dog on a leash, and for 40 years, but you had no fear or concern about going to hell, which is obviously a lot worse than a dog on a leash.
Well, I suppose I was to an extent, but I just want to make a distinction. I said that they didn't scare us with the hell talk, but that doesn't mean I wasn't scared by other avenues of hearing that stuff, what do you say? So if that makes any sense, I don't know.
No, if you could step me through that a bit. So your parents told you about hell and that bad people go to hell, people who disobey God go to hell, but it didn't scare you. And I'm just trying to understand that.
Well, I suppose that could somehow be linked to me as a 20-plus-year-old, where I don't have a sense of urgency at all and don't really fear hell. So maybe...
No, sorry. Come on. You said that you went to Sunday school as a little kid, right? So you learned about hell back then, and maybe you didn't believe in it, but... You learned about hell and that bad people go to hell, right?
Yes.
So
I assure you. We're almost halfway through, and we're stuck with this hell stuff. So I'm not sure if this is the best use of the time. Do you What do you think?
I think you're not telling me the truth, to be honest. I think you've called up and you want advice, but you don't want to tell me the truth. I think you're leading me down the garden path. I'm not saying consciously, but I think you're just not telling me the truth. There's no way, if you believed in hell, that you weren't frightened of it. I mean, there's just no way. If you believe in hell, and if you trust your parents, then you're going to be tortured in boiling oil for all eternity, which is infinitely worse than a dog on a leash. So either you genuinely don't remember, in which case that's kind of confusing, right? Because you say, I was a nervous kid. I've got a high stress response. I got a high stimulus response. I've got a high fight or flight mechanism to the point where a dog on a leash gives me a 40-year stutter. But I wasn't scared by my parents telling me about hell. It doesn't make any sense. And I'm not saying you don't make any sense. I'm saying that this narrative, this story doesn't make any sense. And the reason why we have to spend so much time on topics is you won't be direct with me. You won't be honest with me. So the reason we're pausing and we've done two topics in an hour is because you're not being direct with me. You say, I had a good childhood. Oh, and I was beaten 20 times before the age of 7. Right? And you and I both know that parents who will beat children will also yell at them and call them names. You also put being beaten by a belt at a -3, being beaten by a belt as a child by a guy who's 5 or 7 times your size is terrifying. So the speed of the conversation is entirely dependent upon the honesty and directness of how you respond to things. And if it takes me half an hour to convince you that you can't morally judge an 18-month-old kid for being cowardly, that's not on me, that's on you. If you want the conversation to move faster, you just have to be more honest and direct with me. And if you're not honest and direct with me, the conversation will go at the pace you determine. And you understand from the outside, if you're frightened of a dog on a leash to the point where you get a 40-year stutter and then saying, well, I didn't have any concerns about hell, even though I believed in it, it's just not believable. I want to help. I really want to help. But the story has to make some kind of sense, right?
Well, yeah, but to be fair, we are talking about things that happened more than 35 years ago. And a lot of things have happened since. So but that's how.
So, sorry, this is your addition. This is your addition to our conversation, to remind me that I'm talking about things from a long time ago, and also to remind me that things have happened since. Hang on. Do you think I don't know that?
Yes.
So this is called being passive aggressive. I don't know if you've heard the term, but this is called being passive aggressive, which is you've called me up for my expertise. I've been doing this over 20 years and I'm really good at it. And then you fight me on every term. You complain that we're going too slow. And then you state the blindingly obvious as if I don't know it. I know we're talking about your childhood. I literally know because I asked at the beginning, let's talk about your childhood. You said, let's talk about the childhood, right? So A, I know we're talking about things that happened a long time ago. And B, I'm fully aware that things have happened to you since you were a child. Is there anybody with an IQ north of 65 who doesn't know that? So this is called being passive aggressive. And I would assume it comes because you feel very uncomfortable criticizing your parents. And I understand that, because you're dependent upon your father and you're living with him in your 40s and you have a gambling addiction, which means your savings are bad, right? Or your money is unstable. So my guess is that you don't want to criticize your parents, and that's fine, but you're not being honest and saying, Steph, listen, I feel really uncomfortable criticizing anything to do with my parents. So I'm just going to tell you, I had a fun childhood, a good childhood, and I'm going to minimize anything negative. And but rather than say that, you're just throwing up barriers, like you're trying to prevent me speaking in the same way that your stuttering prevents you from speaking. And then you're criticizing my methodology when you called me up for my expertise. So if I was some totally ripped, fit guy, and you were some 300-pound guy, and you called me up for expertise, and then you were just arguing with me the whole time, that wouldn't make much sense, would it?
No.
So if you want to leave your childhood, we could leave your childhood. I'm obviously not going to, I wouldn't and couldn't force you to talk about anything you don't want to. So you're right. We have an hour and I'm happy to talk about what you want to talk about. If you feel that your expertise in the conversation is more important, you feel that there's other things you want to talk about, I'm happy to submit. So what do you want to talk about?
I just want to apologize. I don't feel I'm able to talk about in length I probably shouldn't mention in length because that's like adding words that weren't there. But anyway, at this moment, I don't think I'm able to talk about those childhood years to the depth.
Okay, that's fine. So what do you want to talk about?
Yes. Okay. So, well, I'm fully, I can criticize my parents if you want to.
That's also passive aggressive, which is saying it's somehow my preference that you criticize your parents. It's not my preference. My preference is that you be honest.
It's on my list.
I'm sorry?
Criticizing my parents would be on my list.
Would be on your list.
So, that's why I was going to come to it eventually anyway. So, if you want,
take the reins. You take the rudder. You tell me what you want to talk about next.
Okay. So talk about my dad for some time. So he's uneducated, but by the reasonably charismatic persona. He has the gift of gab. I think that's the word or term that could use to. He worked as an unpaid pastor. There's the two things he is prepared to speak about with anything, with anyone, but not much more. So religion and diet. And I recently asked that if he hadn't spoken to my sisters in a long time, why would he still only ever want to talk about religious stuff and diet? And his response was that, well, if the communication is so rare, it's all the more reason to only talk about the most important stuff. So that is to say that he has very little interest in keeping contact to his kids and asking what goes on in their lives, so forth. On one hand, he's a guy who defied a communist regime's secret police when he smuggled Bibles. But on the other hand, he's proved to be one of the most valuable people I know because he has, in the recent years, he has fell for numerous online scams time and time again. And he is
sorry, what sort of scams?
Like crypto scams
he's got a gambling problem too.
Well, you could put it that way. Yeah, sure. Yeah, he's.
Don't be passive with me. Hang on, don't be passive with me. If it's not the correct way to phrase it, then tell me what's better.
Trading. I suppose there's some skill involved. Whereas in gambling,
trading. Hang on,
slot gambling.
Trading is not the same as falling for a crypto scam.
It is correct.
Right. So, in terms of falling for a crypto scam, that's a kind of gambling, in that you're hoping to make a lot of money in a relatively short period of time, with little effort.
Yeah, that's fair. But also. In another sense, it's not gambling because I have repeatedly told him in every separate time that this is like for sure a scam, and you just you should cut all contact and not deposit any money and so forth. And he didn't take my advice, and he has fallen for like in 11 or 12 different scams, but I think finally he has wised up a bit, and now he's pretty weary. But still, when they call him, he may end up talking to them like 20 minutes to say that I'm not interested.
Yeah. Okay, so sorry, do you want to spend time talking about your father and crypto scams?
Well, no, that's the extent of it, because there's
okay, more, so more let's make sure we use our time efficiently as you want to. So what do you most want to talk about that would be of most help to you?
Well, I suppose, the cure is to stop gambling, and that's like self-evident. But I suppose I want to know why I keep doing it for like 30 years, and why my life has developed into this point where like I'm in my early 40s and I don't have anything to my name. I have like three failed university studies, totaling like, let's say 5 years total. And the reason I'm still living with my dad is initially because I had my, I went into a gambling debt, and my wages were garnished for some 15 years. But as of now, I'm debt free, but I'm still gambling, and my life hasn't like taken a turn for the better. And I'm using, of course, passive language there. It's I want to say I own up everything. I'm the one who makes the decisions to gamble. So it's always been up to me to either do it or not do it. But you know, having this gambling problem and thus having usually very little money, and then having a stutter, and then having been bullied in school, and being of this obscure religion, these all are things that have made me ill.
Sorry, I'm a little confused, like, because I thought you didn't want to talk about childhood. If you've been gambling for 30 years, did you start gambling when you were like 11 or 12 years old?
Yes.
And then you talk about being bullied in school and growing up in this obscure religious sect. So, sorry, doesn't that bring us back to childhood?
Well, yes.
I mean, that was all a long time ago, apparently, and a lot of things have happened since. So I'm trying to sort of understand where we're supposed to take the conversation. If the stuff you're talking about originates in childhood, but we can't talk about childhood, I'm at a bit of a loss.
Well, I think we got up to like 7 years old. But I started to gamble at 12.
And how did you gamble?
Well, in our country, there are basically these slot machines in almost every like shop and gas station and kiosk. And that's what I used to do. Even before school, I used to go to a gas station and play some, and then go to school. And then after that go to a store and gamble there, and then go back home. And it was pretty much daily occurrence.
Where did you get the money? I mean, I was broke at that age. Where did you get the money?
A friend loaned me quite frequently, and then I started to have summer jobs since I was, I think, 13. And then, I don't know, just a penny there, a fiver here, and so forth. So initially, small money, but eventually it grew into bigger sums.
And you said your wages were garnished for 15 years. What did you end up in debt to? Like, what was the amount?
Around 40K.
40,000, okay. All right.
Yes.
And what was the feeling you had when you were a kid and started to gamble?
Excitement and I don't know if there was anything else to it. We had a computer at home, so we had something to like play with, but this was something else, I suppose. The slot machines. And
what did you want the money for? What would you have done if you'd won big?
Not anything specific, I think. I started to collect sports trading cards when I was... In fact, it was 11 and 12 years old, so I suppose to that, but it only lasted for 3 or 4 years, so that's not a sufficient answer. So... I don't know what do kids buy, like soda and sweets, I suppose. So not much.
Okay, so you didn't like want a computer of your own or something like that you wanted the money for. I'm just curious.
No.
Okay, and did you tell your parents, or did your parents wonder where your money was going with your summer job?
No, I didn't tell, and I don't think they knew. Like for a few years, yeah. But eventually, they found out maybe when I was like 15, 16, something like that.
Okay, so sorry, you got your first job at 13, and for 3 years, they didn't know where your money was going, or they didn't talk to you about money management or check your savings or anything like that.
Yes.
Okay, so that's very neglectful, isn't it?
Sure, yeah. Would agree.
Okay, so you had violence, torment at times, or at least that one time with the peas. You had beatings, and you had neglect.
So you're telling me it wasn't
Don't be passive. Not what I'm telling you. What is?
Yes, sure.
So you had torment, violence, beatings, and neglect. Right? Your parents should in no way, shape, or form have let you just sail off with your money to do whatever you wanted at the age of 13. Because you're still 10 years or more away from brain maturity, right? Any more than they would give you a loaded gun and tell you to figure it out yourself. So were you parented? I don't understand where the parenting comes in. Were you given guidance and wisdom, and were your parents curious about you and helped you along and helped you make better decisions? I mean, how long were you bullied for? What did they do about that?
The bullying was only verbal, and it was like from like 1 year in primary school, and then the last 2 years, like in... whatever is before high school, so
junior like, high. So you were bullied. You were bullied for 3 years. And what did your parents do about that?
Nothing. Like, yeah, I suppose nothing.
Okay, so they were bad parents.
Yeah,
but you told me you had a good childhood. But hang on, but you told me you had a good childhood.
Well, yeah, we lived close to our grandparents and. And we had like, they were a rather good influence on us. And
Sorry, grandparents on whose side?
Mom.
Okay. And did your grandparents know that your parents beat you with belts?
I'm not sure, but I know that my granddad was very strict to his kids back in the day. So that kind of followed through the generation.
So he would be almost certain that you were being beaten, and he would approve.
Maybe, yes.
Okay. Did he talk to you at all about money after you got a job?
No.
Why not? This is foundational. To teach children how to manage money is as important as teaching them about sex, romance, discipline, hard work. Because what's the point of money if you blow it? So why didn't anyone teach you about money? That's foundational to parenting. Half of people's problems in life come from love or sex, and the other half come from money. Why, if your grandparents were a good influence, why didn't they teach you about money?
Well, they used to play the lottery every week, so I suppose that tells something.
Yes, but I bet you they didn't have their wages garnished for 15 years, right?
No.
So that's like saying, I'm a raging alcoholic and have been since my early teens, but my grandparents would have a drink a week. It's not the same, right?
No.
So I mean this with sympathy, but I'm not sure you're aware of this, which you should be after listening to me for 7 years. That's why I'm a tad impatient. Who parented you? Who gave you wisdom, advice, love, care, concern, curiosity?
Yes.
Mom and grandparents, those three to various degrees.
Okay, tell me what they taught you.
They were in terms of teaching, you're putting me on the spot. I don't know about teachings. My granddad was very, I don't know if this makes any sense, but he was very angry to his oldest son for that he sold forest near the house. I don't know. That probably doesn't make any sense.
So your grandfather was in a land dispute with his son?
Well, you could say that. Yes.
Okay, so that's bad parenting. You shouldn't raise a child where you get into some land dispute.
Yeah, that's fair.
Okay, so they didn't teach you about money. Who taught you about dating and sex? And love and romance?
Absolutely no one.
Okay, so how were you parented? You say your grandparents were a good influence. They approved of the beatings. They didn't teach you anything. And they're bad parents themselves because they're getting into some stupid dispute about land with their son.
Yeah. And not much of...
And they do, what did your grandparents do about your bullying?
Nothing.
So, I mean, I got to ask you to raise your standards of human behavior here. Your standards are in the gutter, bro, and I sympathize with that. You know, if there's only moldy bread to eat, I guess you got to make do with moldy bread and call it a feast, but it's not, right? It's all terrible. Parents are supposed to know when you're getting bullied because your mood changes. And they're supposed to do something about it. In fact, the reason why you were bullied is because you were distant from your parents were distant from you. Because you weren't close to your parents, you got bullied. Right? Because if you had been close to your parents, you wouldn't have been bullied because your parents would have dealt with it.
Mm.
So you were thrown to the wolves, bro. Sorry,
my dad was... My dad was absent very, very much during those years. I'd say in terms of my age, essentially from age 10 on, he was very absent. He had this very small time. Business that wasn't really bringing bringing in the monies. And mom was a teacher, and she worked nearby. And then when I was probably 16 or something like that, she decided to finish her studies, and she was 1 year she was away. Yeah.
She left you and your sisters to go study somewhere else when your father was barely home.
She took the youngest sister with her.
She split up the siblings. Okay, got it.
Yeah, and because there was a substantial age gap between the youngest and the rest of us. Yeah, and during that time, dad was maybe a bit more around, but still not much.
Okay, so you know, you sound like you're just making excuses for them, right?
Well, I'm telling you how it is.
I say you were neglected, and you say, well, my father had to run this business that wasn't making much money. He was away a lot. My mother got educated. I mean, these are facts. Do you hold them responsible for these terrible decisions?
Yeah.
Okay, why haven't you not said that it was bad? You're just describing things.
Oh, well, I guess we just haven't got around to it. But yeah,
no,
it was
come
bad.
On. Don't be passive. Don't be passive. I'm going to keep nagging you about this. I'm listening very carefully.
Yes?
Because I asked, what did your parents or grandparents do about your bullying? You say, well, my father wasn't around much. He had this business, wasn't making much money. My mother got an education, moved away. These are all choices.
Yes.
And even if your father was gone a lot, he's not gone all the time, there's still time for him to give you advice, ask you how you're doing, and do some basic parenting.
Yeah.
It's all a non sequitur. You're just wasting time. Because you're concerned about our time together, which is fine. That's wise. We want to get as much value as possible. But then you go on these kind of pathetic descriptions on the bad decisions your parents made as if that excuses anything, or that's kind of some reason for something. Them not being around is just another example of bad parenting.
Yes.
And
yes.
For a Christian to choose money over the moral instruction of his children is kind of satanic. I mean, yes, Christianity commands parents to be heavily involved in their children's lives and to teach them right from wrong and to make sure they stay on the path. And your parents didn't do that at all. Sorry, you were going to say?
The satanic nature of my dad, if you will. So, yes, he values talking to strangers about religious stuff way more than talking to his daughters about anything. So that's very telling and very bad.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me a little bit about your adult life. You're now living with your father. For how long have you been living with your father?
Roughly 15 years.
And has he ever said, maybe you should get a place of your own?
A couple times when my gambling flared.
Okay, but not as a principle, just as a reaction to negative stuff.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Okay. And are your parents separated?
Yes. I don't know exactly when they split up or got divorced, but they separated essentially roughly maybe 23 or 4 years ago. When I was 16, 17, something like that.
Oh, is this while your mom was away on her education?
Yes, at a minimum, it's very close to that time.
Okay.
They drifted apart and had different views on religious stuff and diet and how to raise as kids and so
on. Okay, but you're just saying stuff that they've said. You don't, you've got to have some opinions of your own. There's no such thing as just drifting apart. That doesn't happen. That's just like continents drift apart. People make choices. So, yeah, drifted apart. I mean, whose phrase is that? Is that your dad's phrase or your mom's?
That was just a phrase I've heard in English.
Okay, but it must be how they describe it or it applies to their descriptions of it. Because let's say that your father said, the reason I left your mother was because she cheated with a football team. Then you wouldn't say they drifted apart. So it must be in accordance with how they describe the end of their marriage.
Well, you know, that also did. There was some spousal abuse by dad over the years, and that.
So how the fuck does that fit in with drifted apart? And they had differences in diet. Bro, you are not an honest and direct person.
She stayed so many years after the first abuse, but then at some point it just was enough.
I get it. But that's very different from they drifted apart, right? He beat her.
Right, yes.
So you see, that's very different.
Yes.
Now, I'll tell you this, like, so it's kind of my gig, like it's sort of my job to pull apart these threads and to get to the truth. How interested are most people in trying to figure out your life if you're not honest about it?
They'll probably leave me alone to,
yeah, they
to
just
my
won't
own
bother.
Devices.
Yeah, they won't bother. They won't bother. I mean, unless you pay them a lot of money, right? Maybe somebody like a therapist might or something like that. But so why do you think you're not direct? And I'm not saying this from a moral standpoint, right? Because maybe you're not aware of it. But why do you think you're not direct and just say, well, one of the reasons that my parents split up is my father beat my mother? Why are you saying, well, doctrinal disputes about diet, they drifted apart. Like, why do you think you're not direct? And again, I say this with sympathy, not any big bad. I'm just curious.
In my adult life, I've like I've been like used to lie by omission, mm-hmm. because I don't want to really reveal that I gamble and I'm a loser in that way and some other ways, and then having a stutter is it involves lying as well, because you can be like a covert stutterer and an overt stutterer. So you can to an extent you can hide your stuttering. Yeah,
okay, so you're aware So you're aware that you have a habit of gaslighting, of misdirecting, of lying by omission and obscuring things, right?
Well, not sure about the gaslighting.
Drop the gaslighting. Let's keep the others.
Yes, okay.
Are you aware of that, right?
Yeah, probably at least in my, like, one-to-one conversations. If I'm concerned of the nature of a set of relations, right?
Okay, so hang on. Sorry, I get that. I mean, I get it comes out of concern. So you're aware that you have a tendency to lie by omission, to misdirect, to obfuscate, to, you know, not necessarily be direct and clear, right?
Yes.
Okay. So why would you act that out in that conversation rather than tell me about that and say, I'm going to do my best, but I do have this bad habit, so let me know if it shows up? Because I had to figure that out in hindsight after an hour, right?
Mm.
Why do you think you weren't upfront with me about that?
All I know to say is that I'm like not an experienced communicator, and this is a new thing for me.
You don't need experience to be honest. You know, if I say to someone, if I say to someone, who borrows my car, like they borrow my car, and they bring it back, and it's the bumper is missing. Right, the bumper got torn off or something, right? And I say, did you hit anything? Did like what? And they said, no, I didn't hit anything. It must have been like that when I left. And then it turns out there's video footage of them tearing off the bumper in some parking lot accident. And they say, well, I'm just not an experienced communicator. It's like, you don't need to be an experienced communicator to tell the truth, do you?
That's a fair point.
Because you make up a lot of excuses, and excuses are very common. And again, I sympathize with this, but excuses are very common among people who don't succeed. So one of the reasons that you don't succeed is because you give yourself excuses and you give your parents excuses. And when you listen back to this conversation, you'll hear it constantly that you just make up excuses. And excuses are wanting something for nothing, which is when you don't succeed at something, you feel bad. I mean, we all do, right? So when you don't succeed at something, you feel bad. And then you have one of two choices. Well, you have one of three choices, right? So if you fail at something, you can either give up the goal, you can improve, or you can make excuses. Now, if you give up the goal, then you usually have to choose a new goal, which is also uncomfortable, and then you have to try and succeed at that. If you try to improve, that's very difficult and unpleasant. The easiest thing in the world is to make up excuses. And your father, it sounds like, and your mother to some degree, takes the easy route. When he's angry, he beats his children with a belt. If he prefers talking to strangers rather than his own children, he will talk to strangers rather than his own children. If he wants to make money without much effort, he gets involved in, 12 crypto scams or some crazy number, right? And if he gets angry at his wife, he just beats her. So he takes the easy path. He takes the lazy path. And I assume your mother did as well to some degree. And if it's difficult to deal with his son getting bullied, he just ignores it. And if it's easier to go and work at a stupid business than to actually be a parent, well, he'll go and work at a stupid business rather than actually be a parent. And he's not proactive with you and saying, listen, man, we got to talk about your life because it's not going well and I'm your father, so I'm central to it not going well. So let's talk about it. Tell me about what you liked or didn't like about your childhood. Tell me about things that I could have done better as a father. Let's sort this out. No, he just keeps you around because it's easier or safer or he doesn't have to get confronted. And then, if your gambling gets out of control, he's like, well, you got to move out. That's just reactive. It's lazy. Your parents are lazy. And what is gambling? Gambling is laziness. I want something. I don't really want to work for it. I want a reward. I don't really want to work for it. I want to make $100,000, but I don't want to develop any real skills. I don't want to learn how to play the guitar and write music and go to cafes and release my music and try and make money. I don't want to become a great writer. I don't want to become great at sports. I don't want to become really skilled with computers. I don't want to do any of that because that's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And it doesn't sound to me like you had much work modeled for you at all as a kid. And you had parents who want something for nothing. And the most deadly thing that parents want that they haven't earned is their children's love and respect. I'm your father. Honor thy mother and thy father. You owe me this. I don't have to earn it. I don't have to earn it. I just have to demand it. I have to threaten. You go to hell if you don't give me love and respect. And you, as a child who had a very strong and reactive nervous system, were frightened by a dog, which means you should have got a significant amount of comfort. You have to parent differently based upon your children's natures. Some children, you need to hit the brakes because they're too enthusiastic. Other children, you need to hit the gas because they're more shy and retiring. You need to try and balance things out. But parenting is different for every child. And your parents needed to adapt to you. And I think it sounds like your parents were fucking lazy. Because what they did was they said, oh, he's too nervous. He's too high-strung. He's such a fraidy cat. He's such a coward. He doesn't have any courage. He's not brave. He's not brave. And they defined you as deficient when all you were was different. It's like if you have one kid who's got perfect pitch and a great singing voice, things which you're born with, by the way, right? You've got one kid got perfect pitch and a great singing voice and another kid who's tone deaf and sounds like a frog with a cold and say, well, this child sings so beautifully and is always on key and in tune and you sound terrible because you're lazy. Well, you're taking the wrong standard. One kid's got a great singing voice, they're born with it, and perfect pitch. Great. Lovely for them. The other kid is born without perfect pitch or any pitch, and they have a bad singing voice, and they're not musical, and saying, well, I'm going to send them both to music school, and they're both going to be singers. No, they're not, because one is fundamentally different from the other. You've got one kid who's 6'8", and one kid who's 5'2". And you say, you're both going to be basketball stars. No, they're not. You got one kid who's super good looking, one kid who's kind of funny looking. You're both going to be models. No, they're not. You got to parent differently based upon the differences in your children. And you were high strung, which is a real plus. You know, there's a reason why people are born high strung. And that's because we need early warnings of dangers. And children who are high strung and constantly alert and constantly hypervigilant, they see the enemies before anyone else, and they can help prepare the tribe. So we need high-strung people. We need people who are hypersensitive to stimuli. Like, we need people with super sharp hearing so they can hear where the deer is roaming. But then if you yell in their ear, it's going to hurt a lot more because their hearing is super sharp or whatever it is, right? So your parents were lazy. And your father is lazy because it's more fun to talk to strangers than to try and work things out with his own children. And your father is lazy because he hasn't dug in for the last 30 years to figure out where your life is going wrong. He does what he wants. He is a hedonist. Your mother, I assume, is the same way. They're just hedonists. They do what's pleasurable for them in the moment, and they don't fundamentally care about others, other than as vehicles for their own vanity, like your father gets to talk to strangers, and he sounds wise and great and blah, 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 whereas his own children, right? So the clear analysis to me, doesn't mean it's right, but the clear analysis to me is that you had modeled for you getting something for nothing, that your parents want your respect and obedience without earning it, by beating you with belts. And you know about your father's abuse of your mother, so maybe you heard it, maybe you saw it, maybe she just told you. I'm sure he didn't. So your father wanted respect without earning it, and he did it through violence and manipulation and threats. And your father wants something for nothing, so he goes for crypto scams. And your father wants love from his wife, even though he beats her. Your father wants respect from his children, even though he beats them and doesn't ever try and work anything out with them or be honest or curious. He didn't parent, but he wants all of the respect of a parent. And you want money without all the hard work of actually going out and achieving value in the free market and getting paid for the exchange of value. You want, and I don't mean this as any criticism of you, I'm just talking about the template. You want something for nothing. You want something for nothing, and that leaves you with nothing. You know that mathematically, like the house always wins. The longer you gamble, the more certain you are to lose. And you've been doing it for 30 years and you've lost just about everything, right? So wanting something for nothing gives you nothing. Building something that you provide value in the world is a sustainable model for success. So, and again, I say this is not any condemnation, maybe a little bit of your dad, because I'm on the phone with you, not him. If I was on the phone with him, he probably wouldn't want to talk about his childhood either, because that would be difficult or uncomfortable, right? So I was asking you difficult or uncomfortable questions, and you took the easy route of kind of falsifying things, claiming you didn't really remember. Like, I don't really remember, but I do remember. I don't really remember from 6 or 7 or 8, but I really do remember from the age of 18 months, right? Well, I was scared of a dog on a leash, but I wasn't scared of hell, even though I believed in it and believed I was likely to go there, right? So you take the path of least resistance, and I sympathize with that. I really do. I mean, we're all tempted by it. Everybody's tempted by it. I really understand that. And I'm not putting myself outside, oh, I'm above all of that. No, no, I get it. I get it. Do I want sit-ups or liposuction, right? Everybody is kind of tempted by those things. But you want to take the path of least resistance because that was what was modeled for you. If your father wanted to teach you self-discipline, he would have controlled his own temper and not beat his children with belts or open hands 20 times before the age of 6 or 7. He would have showed self-restraint if he got upset with your mom. He would have showed self-restraint with that, not just beaten her, which is hedonistic. It's lazy. It's undisciplined. Because he said, well, my father was very strict. No, he wasn't. He was lazy as a jellyfish. He was not strict at all. Because strict people are strict with their own temper and don't abuse people. Strict people earn value in the world. They don't just run after crypto scams hoping that money is going to fall from the sky. Strict people know that their children are failing and will move heaven and earth to help set their children back on the right path. So you had modeled for you laziness, hedonism, wanting something for nothing, and that has been your template. And so that's what you do. How do I get value? I gamble. I want something for nothing. But people who provide value don't want to spend much time around people who want something for nothing because it's a negative sum game. You know, if you wanted to go into business with someone like Bob, right? So you wanted to go into business with Bob and you said, well, we'll both put up $10,000 and we'll both work 60 hours a week. And you said, well, no, I want half the business, but I don't want to put in any money and I don't want to do any work, but I still want half the business. What's Bob going to say?
No, you're out.
Yeah, he's going to say, you're out. I'm not going into business with you because, and you're like, no, I want the value. I just don't want to do the work. Then Bob's going to say, well, I'm not going to go into business with you because that's crazy, right? I mean, why would I put up the $10,000 and work 60 hours a week when you don't have to do it all, any of it? You don't have to put in any money. You don't have to do any work and you get the same as me. No thanks. So people who provide value don't really want to spend time around people who want something for nothing. Was your mother very pretty when she was younger?
Just above average, I'd say.
And what about your father? How good looking was he?
They were roughly on the same level.
Just my average,
father,
right?
Father is kind of short, but he's taller than my mom, but anyway.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I was just wondering. Sometimes women who are very attractive, they get something for nothing just based on their looks because they're just milking hormones and evolution and stuff like that. So they get something for nothing that way.
Yeah.
Was your mother a good teacher?
Yes. I've heard that she's been very liked by her pupils.
Okay. Was your father a good preacher? You said he was an amateur preacher or lay preacher. Was he a good preacher?
Yeah, as per the reports, yeah.
Okay.
He's well received.
Right. So people who are charming to strangers and cruel to family, especially their children, right? They're nice to other people and other people's children, but they're harsh and cruel to their own children, are some of the worst people on the planet. And it's really cruel, right? Like if your child is dying of thirst, like, oh God, I can't take another step. I'm dying of thirst. Like I was when I went hiking in Africa with my father and he just gave me a pebble to suck on. It'll be fine. It's like, you know, it's just recycling moisture, right? But if your child is on some hike and it's hot and there's no water and you just take out a bottle of water and you pour it in the sand, then you're horribly cruel, right? Now, if you're out on a hike with your children, and they're dying of thirst, like not just I'm kind of thirsty, like their mouths are like cotton, like they're having trouble walking and they're dying of thirst. And then you take out a big jug of water from your backpack and you march right over and give it to all of the other children. Do you understand how cruel that is?
Mm-hmm.
You're signaling to your children that they mean nothing and only other children and other people matter. So parents who are nice to others and cruel to their own children are some of the worst people on the planet. Because it means they know how to be nice. Like if your parents were just assholes to everyone, we'd say, okay, well, they just don't know how to be nice. But if your parents know how to be nice to others, but are cruel and indifferent at home, then I'm sorry, to me, they're some of the worst people on the planet. But you're limited in what you can do and say with regards to judging your father because you've been relying upon his charity for 15 years, right?
Yes.
And so you're stuck a little bit, and I don't have any particularly great answers other than you also want something for nothing. Not just the gambling. What's the other thing that you want for nothing?
Maybe love.
I'm sorry?
Do you mean love?
I'm not sure what you're saying. Sorry.
Do you mean love?
Oh, love. Maybe. We haven't talked about that. No, the other thing that you want something for nothing is your room and board.
Can you repeat?
Your rent and your house, where you live. Do you pay anything for food and rent?
Well, several years I didn't pay anything, but the last like few years I've been paying like a quarter.
Okay, so you paid for 12 years, you paid nothing, and then for the last few years you've been paying a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. So that's wanting something for nothing, is you want room and board. I mean, do you pay for groceries? Do you pay for internet? Do you pay for insurance? Do you pay for upkeep, maintenance, heating, cooling, electricity? I mean, do you pay for anything else or just a little bit of rent?
Rent and some groceries. That's it.
Okay. Right. So you want something for virtually nothing, which is you want room and board without having to pay much. And for most of your adult life, I guess until your late 30s, that's what you did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, your father, of course, shouldn't be giving you something for nothing, right? He shouldn't be giving you room and board for nothing into your late 20s, your 30s, right? Because that just blunts your ambition, right? You know, like nobody works hard on a job if they just inherited $10 million, right?
Yeah, true.
So he was giving you free stuff because he wanted free stuff. Now, does your father, did he ever remarry? Does he live alone?
I have never seen or heard him being with another woman or alone. Yes.
Okay, so you're his only primary relationship, right?
Yes.
Okay, so he wants something for nothing too, which is he wants you around so he doesn't feel lonely just because he's your father.
He doesn't. He needs constant help with the IT stuff. He's really bad at it with the computer stuff.
Oh, is that because he's like his business is, has a lot of tech?
No, he's not been in the business for roughly 15 years. So just his daily use of computers.
Oh, so he wants tech support for free. See, something for nothing. Well, I guess he's paying some room and board, but
yeah.
So everyone's involved in this something for nothing scam, right?
Yeah.
And something for nothing keeps you a child. I'm so sorry, go ahead.
Good way to put it, yes. Something for nothing.
Yeah, and so something for nothing keeps you a child because there was a time when you absolutely did deserve something for nothing, which is when you were little, when you were a child. When you're a child, you should get something for nothing. When you're a baby, you should get love, care, attention, affection, enjoyment, delight, happiness, smiles. You should get all of that for nothing. You don't have to lift a finger. You don't have to do anything. You, as a baby, as a toddler, should get something for nothing. Now, of course, as you get older, then your parents should start asking for and expecting reciprocity because they're about to launch you into a world that doesn't give a shit about what you want. Seriously, nobody gives a shit about what you want. Nobody gives a shit about what I want. There's not, I mean, my immediate family and maybe a friend or two from time to time. Nobody wakes up in the morning, except maybe, you know, my wife and my daughter to some degree. But nobody wakes up in the morning and says, ah, that Steph guy, what can I do to make his life better today? I mean, you've been listening to me for 6 or 7 years. How many times have you woken up and said, my one mission today is to make Steph's life better?
Yeah, never.
Never. And I'm
unfortunately,
glad.
Yes.
Because no, it's not unfortunately. Otherwise, you'd be a stalker. I don't want that, right? So, I mean, certainly there are a few people who say that they want to make my life worse. Okay, that's, you know, for whatever reasons of moral torpitude or whatever, right? But nobody wants to make your life better. Oh, sorry, are we still in? Yeah, sorry, I just got a message. Yeah, I just got a message that I think your second account was coming in. Okay, no problem. So,
okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
Please proceed.
Yeah, so nobody, I mean, if you're a hot woman or whatever, or some super rich Chad jawline guy, people might want to make your life better, but only because they want to use you for money or sex or status or because you're photogenic or whatever it is, right? So for most of us, we go from a situation where we get everything for nothing, right? As a baby and a toddler, we get everything for nothing. And then we're supposed to sort of slowly transition and shift into exchanging value, right?
Right.
Now, my argument would be that unfortunately, and this is why I say I have sympathy, unfortunately, you are emotionally stuck in expecting something for nothing because you were not taken care of when you were a baby and a toddler. You were ignored. And that's why the dog incident was so powerful for you. It wasn't that you were by the dog that caused the stutter, in my humble opinion. It was not that you were frightened by the dog that caused the stutter. It's the lack of comfort, care, concern, and empathy that happened afterwards and since about that incident. The reason the dog scared you was not because of the dog, but because you were not taken care of in the way that you should have been after, if that makes sense.
yeah, it probably would have dissipated.
Sure. Every kid gets startled by dogs. My daughter, when we were in Sao Paulo, a dog jumped up on her and she was startled. Once when we were out hiking, a dog ran out of the bushes and was jumping up at her and she was frightened. And I myself was terrified by a Great Dane when I was a kid that kept me up against a tree, growling and barking every time I tried to move. And it was like the size of a horse to me. It was like a freaking dragon. So every kid gets frightened by dogs. It's a natural thing. But the difference with you is, of course, it sounds like you're a little bit more high stimulus, which is a great strength. It's not a weakness at all. It can be great, very powerful in your life. But it wasn't the dog that did you in. It was the lack of care, concern from your parents, and that left you feeling anxious, afraid, and unprotected. Plus, the beatings didn't help. So I think if I were in your shoes, I would really sort of examine and just mull over this issue or this problem or what it means to be stuck in a state where you expect something for nothing. Because I think this is why I was talking about early childhood, because it's a very early childhood phase where you should get something for nothing, but you didn't. And so I think you're still seeking for it in gambling.
Okay, thank you. That's food for thought, for sure. And that makes sense.
Good. Okay, well, listen, I'll stop here. I have another call. So big hugs, man. I really appreciate the pushback and all of that. That's very helpful as well. But I just wanted to give you my big sympathy for this. And I hope you'll keep me posted about how things are going.
Thank you.
All right. All the best. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.